Thanks for being here this afternoon. I'm going to give a brief overview of two community engagement meetings that we had with American Indian tribes as a part of a large national guidance project that we've developed over the past couple of years. First, I'd like to be sure to tell you I have nothing to disclose. I'll talk a little bit about the background project, the at-risk populations project, and then explain why we chose to engage tribes directly as a part of this project, and walk you through the planning and the meetings that we held, as well as the impact of the meetings and the lessons learned. The At-Risk Populations Project began in 2007 and is ongoing. It's funded by the CDC, which asked the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials to create a national guidance document for tribal, state, territorial, and local health officials and other agencies to address the needs of at-risk populations specifically in the context of pandemic preparedness. You can see the interim version of the guidance document at that link, or just go to the ASTO website and search for it. It's a 120-page document that's very user-friendly despite its length, and I'm not going to get into all of the ins and outs of the guidance document, but I do want to focus on two things. We used a factors-based definition of at-risk populations, and we really tried to represent, to take an attitude of engagement and a grassroots approach to development of this guidance document. So we had an advisory committee of 19 experts, and we convened 67 subject matter experts in work groups. But by far, one of the most meaningful and useful aspects of this project since 2007 has been community engagement meetings that we held, including with a number of at-risk populations, both in Boston, Kansas City, Washington, D.C. So when we decided that we ought to engage tribes, it was a pretty easy answer what kind of approach we wanted to use, this successful engagement approach. When we did the first, the interim version of the guidance document, we did that in about 5 months from convening the work groups. And when we finally paused to catch our breath and look at the guidance document with the idea of revising it, we really felt that tribes were a missing voice in the guidance document. And it was important to represent some key concerns, particularly the role of sovereignty in relationship to pandemic preparedness, identifying collaborations and resource gaps, both at the tribal government to city, county, state government, and within the tribes as well, and to identify the specific needs of at-risk populations and the tribal resources and systems that they use. Again, we focused on having the one-day engagement meetings that we had used with the other at-risk populations engagement. And the key aspect of this, at least from my perspective, has been the importance of two-way learning. It's a way to share knowledge and information. It's also a great way to get knowledge and information. We wanted to understand how tribes might use the guidance and to really hear firsthand about issues that tribes were facing. Our goal ultimately was to add the findings into the guidance document, and so we began the planning process. There was a lot of research and outreach, kind of key informant interviews, to get a sense of how best to plan this, and then we created a planning committee, and I just want to identify the three people photographed here are Vicky Tallchief, Mike Snesrud, and Joy Dorsher. And they were a key component of our planning committee, along with other representatives from CDC and the ASTO and SIDRAP staff. It was important to figure out who to invite for these meetings. It was likewise an important step to get permission to meet on tribal land. And as a part of the outreach that we did, we attended a lot of meetings, we made a lot of phone calls, and we relied very heavily on trusted go-betweens in terms of reaching the right community members and getting the message out about our engagement meetings. With the meeting in, the first meeting that we had, I'll explain a little bit more about that later, but for the second meeting, there were a number of barriers because it was a meeting in the middle of Minnesota and it was for tribal members from across the state. So they had to travel long distances. They would have to stay overnight and there were a lot of barriers to participating. So we did focus on stipends to reduce those barriers and make it easier for people to participate. In addition, cultural considerations featured very heavily in the planning process. We knew that we wanted a venue that was on tribal land. We knew that it was important not just to have a venue that was free for that day, but that didn't conflict with other activities, such as elections, which don't occur on the election cycle that many of us might be familiar with, or powwows or drumming circles, other activities on the tribal property. We worked very hard and had many different versions of documents in order to make sure that we had more culturally appropriate recruitment and meeting materials, and we had those vetted repeatedly. And we focused on having a native facilitator for both meetings. At the second meeting, which consisted of a lot of community members and small tabletop discussions, we also had some native facilitators and note takers at the meetings, as well as some just-in-time training for others. So this is just a brief overview of the two meetings. The first one was in New Mexico. We were very fortunate to be a part of the CDC's Tribal Consultation Advisory Committee meeting. So they yielded half a day of their schedule to us to hold this meeting. And that consisted of tribal leaders from across the US as well as local tribal employees and representatives from the New Mexico area. The Minnesota meeting was a full day in April. And that occurred almost in the middle of the state at the Mille Lacs Band Reservation's Grand Casino. It took most of a day and we had 49 tribal members and representatives, which represented a broad proportion of the bands and tribes in the state of Minnesota, as well as some representatives from outside the state. We were actually quite heartened to find that some of our key findings were similar to other at-risk populations engagement meetings, and yet there were a lot of unique issues that were raised in the tribal engagement meetings. The role of sovereignty did not come up in the overall at-risk populations meetings, but was very heavily discussed in these engagement meetings. There was a strong desire on the part of tribes to be included in local public health planning and to have more of a conversation at the local public health level so that people understood tribal capacity, both its strengths and weaknesses. And there was, in the Mille Lacs meeting, a real emphasis on tribes hearing more about the impact of a pandemic and needing to plan more for changing roles for traditional healers and community health representatives, and potentially changing practices such as spiritual gatherings and funerals depending on the severity of a pandemic. In addition, everyone recognized a need for more planning with tribes and the Indian Health Service, and a key issue for some at the meetings was the timely receipt of strategic national stockpile items for the tribes. As a result of these meetings, we made a lot of changes to our guidance document, including adding a freestanding section on sovereignty and adding a section on planning for traditional healers and community health representatives, as well as adding some detail that kind of came up through the tribal engagement meetings that we hadn't heard elsewhere on ways to present emergency communications and a great resource for tribes in the tribal epidemiology centers. The meetings also had a broader impact for both of our organizations in that we have a new awareness and coordination with states and stronger connections for future partnerships. So in terms of the lessons learned, I've simplified this as much as possible, but I would be happy to expand on it if you have specific questions. Start absolutely as early as you can. We gave ourselves almost 9 months to have these meetings, and we needed pretty much every second of that time. And we found that it was very important to really focus on building relationships first and to have a partnership that you could then have this kind of an engagement meeting as a result of that partnership. In order to do that, we were very, very lucky to have really good advisors and that we trusted them. And so we could really start to leverage relationships and partnerships quickly because we had advice from the right people. Credibility and personal contact were really important, and I had to attend a lot of meetings and make a lot of phone calls and really explain myself repeatedly in order to start to build those relationships. And so that was a very time-consuming but very worthwhile part of this process. And then, as much as you can, try to anticipate scheduling conflicts. I mentioned elections and powwows. So we thought that we were safe because there were no conflicts occurring the day of our meeting, but it turns out that the week after our meeting, there was a very large powwow on the same reservation, and people did not want to travel that far 2 weeks in a row. So there were some people from far away who didn't come because of an event that occurred later. It was really important for us to identify and engage opinion leaders, such as the woman in the photo on the right, and to ask them to recruit others. This is an urban elder from Minneapolis who actually brought a lot of urban residents to this meeting and really helped set the tone for a successful meeting. And where it's appropriate for your topic matter, consider the value of recruiting all ages. We had a separate table of youth at this meeting, and it was really a good experience to be able to reach out and to have some success in reaching out and adding youth to this kind of an engagement meeting. It was very important as we planned the meeting to really pay attention to details that had to do with respecting traditions. And our planning committee helped us with that. So we had an opening and closing prayer at the meetings. And for the leaders who offered the prayers, we also gave gift baskets. And tobacco, which will be heard about in a lot of different contexts outside of this one at this meeting, was actually offered those little red pouches as a form of social contract between our facilitator and the participants in the room. And this was something that was very important to our facilitator and took a lot of talking to understand the importance and the value of having this agreement and participation and accepting of the tobacco. In addition, at the community meeting that we held in Minnesota, some of the elders were served meals at their table. And for those who chose that option, it was a very nice gesture of respect to make. We planned our agenda in order to get people talking as early in the meeting as possible and to keep them engaged. One of the things that we did to facilitate this was we actually assigned seating and split people up who were part of large family groups because our assistants on the planning team made it very clear that if there was a family just of relatives at one table, you might run into a situation where one person spoke for many. So we tried to avoid that. We had a very public voting process where the tables came up with issues that were important to them, and then the entire group was able to vote on them. You can see in the photo, the woman is actually using a bingo dauber to cast her vote on a piece of on a printed ballot. And this was a really popular way to engage people. It gave them sort of an active way to make their vote. On the downside, however, there might have been a little too much groupthink. It was a very different outcome from a private voting where you could just punch a little keypad. Finally, I want to leave you with the idea that although this was just a one-day engagement meeting, we really emphasized the importance of following up with our participants. So we wrote up and distributed a report on the meetings along with some preparedness information. We wrote an article thanking the tribe that hosted us and had it published in their tribal newsletter. And we actually sought help from some of the participants in the meetings in drafting additions to our guidance document, including I met with one of the elders last week and she helped me with these slides. So as you can see, the discussions are ongoing, and it was a very fruitful engagement process for us that we hope will just be the first of many. Thanks.